The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to GFG Tonight. We are listening to the first words of Vladimir Putin. That's why we're starting in advance.
Но летчики и специалисты двух стран делали все, чтобы приблизить победу. Рисковали, отдавали...
The English translator seems to have disappeared by Russians, but he was explaining that Vladimir Putin seems to be mentioning that it is a historic moment.
Я знаю, что и здесь тоже есть такой же памятник. На военном кладбище всего в нескольких километрах отсюда захоронены советские пилоты, погибшие при выполнении той героической миссии. Признательны американским властям и гражданам за бережное отношение к их памяти. Это выглядит достойно и благородно. Мы всегда будем помнить другие исторические примеры, когда наши страны вместе громили общих врагов в духе боевого товарищества и союзничества, оказывали друг другу помощь и поддержку. Это наследие, уверен, будет нам помогать восстанавливать, выстраивать взаимовыгодные, равноправные связи уже на новом этапе, даже в самых непростых условиях. Как известно, российско-американские встречи в верхах не проводились более 4 лет. Это большой срок. Минувший период был очень непростым для двухсторонних отношений. И, скажем прямо, они скатились до самой низкой...
While we await the English translation... What's at play here is the state of peace in the world with regards to the Ukraine war. Oh, we have some words appearing. But what's at play is the state of war, whether Putin and Trump alone can get together and basically make it so that Zelensky cannot keep the war going. Nick Fuentes has been criticizing the state of Trump trying to make these press conferences without even knowing what was good, without knowing if they would reach an agreement. Now, RSBN has the English translation. Let's see if we can switch to RSBN. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Well, that is not live. Right side broadcasting. Right side broadcasting network.
Of that conflict, and we've said it multiple times, to consider all legitimate concerns of Russia and to reinstate a just balance of security in Europe and in the world on the whole. And I agree with President Trump, as he has said today, that naturally the security of Ukraine should be ensured as well. Naturally, we are prepared to work on that. I would like to hope that the agreement that we've reached together will help us bring closer that goal and will pave the path towards peace in Ukraine. We expect that Kiev and European capitals will perceive that constructively and that they won't throw a wrench in the works. They will not make any attempts to use some backroom dealings on to conduct provocations to torpedo the nascent progress.
That is what we've seen from Ukraine, just passive-aggressive droning.
Global trade started to grow. It's still very symbolic. Still, we have a growth of 20%. As I've said, we have a lot of dimensions for joint work. It is clear that the U.S. and Russian investment and business cooperation has tremendous potential. Russia and the U.S. can offer each other so much in trade, digital, high-tech, and in space exploration. We see that Arctic cooperation is also very possible, and our international context, for example, between the Far East of Russia and the West Coast of the U.S. Overall, it's very important for our countries to turn the page, to go back to cooperation. It is symbolic that not far away from here, the border between Russia and the U.S., there was a so-called international dateline. I think you can step over, literally, from yesterday into tomorrow. And I hope that we'll succeed in that, in political sphere. I would like to thank President Trump for our joint work, for the well-wishing and trustworthy tone of our conversation. It's important that both sides are result-oriented, and we see that the President of the U.S. has a very clear idea of what he would like to achieve. He sincerely cares about prosperity of his nation. Still, he understands that Russia has its own national interests.
The jackass says, "I thought the flyover showed how insecure Trump is." Well, that's what the Democrats and the warmongers will tell you, but they always want to develop enmity against Putin. So they'll never be happy when they become friends.
I tried to convince my previous American colleague that the situation should not be brought to the point of no return when it would come to hostilities. And I said it quite directly back then, that it's a big mistake. Today, when President Trump saying that if he was the president back then, there will be no war. And I'm quite sure that it would indeed be so. I can confirm that. I think that overall, me and President Trump have built a very good business-like and trustworthy contact. And I have every reason to believe that moving down this path, we can come, and the sooner the better, to the end of the conflict in Ukraine. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, well, mostly empty words, but compliments.
Very profound, and I will say that I believe we had a very productive meeting. There were many, many points that we agreed on, most of them, I would say, a couple of big ones that we haven't quite got there, but we've made some headway. So there's no deal until there's a deal. I will call up NATO in a little while. I will call up the various people that I think are appropriate, and I'll, of course, call up President Zelensky and tell him about today's meeting. It's ultimately up to them. They're going to have to agree with what Marco and Steve and some of the great people from the Trump administration who've come here, Scott and John Ratliff, thank you very much. But we have some of our really great leaders. They've been doing a phenomenal job. We also have some tremendous Russian business representatives here, and I think, you know, everybody wants to deal with us. We've become the hottest country anywhere in the world
Trump
in a very short
tired.
Period of time. And
I think the Alaska trip was rough.
We look forward to dealing. We're going to try and get this over with. We really made some great progress today. I've always had a fantastic relationship with President Putin, with Vladimir. We had many tough meetings, good meetings. We were interfered with by the Russia hoax. It made it a little bit tougher to deal with, but he understood it. I think he's probably seen things like that during the course of his career. He's seen it all, but we had to put up with the Russia hoax. He knew it was a hoax, and I knew it was a hoax, but what was done was very criminal. But it made it harder for us to deal as a country in terms of the business and all of the things that we'd like to have dealt with. But we'll have a good chance when this is over. So just to put it very quickly, I'm going to start making a few phone calls and tell them what happened. But we had an extremely productive meeting, and many points were agreed to. There are just a very few that are left. Some are not that significant. One is probably the most significant. But we have a very good chance of getting there. We didn't get there, but we have a very good chance of getting there. I would like to thank President Putin and his entire team, whose faces, who I know in many cases, otherwise, other than that, whose faces I get to see all the time in the newspapers. You're almost as famous as the boss, but especially this one right over here. But we had some good meetings over the years, right? Good productive meetings over the years, and we hope to have that in the future. But let's do the most productive one right now. We're going to stop really 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, thousands of people a week from being killed, and President Putin wants to see that as much as I do. So, again, Mr. President, I'd like to thank you very much, and we'll speak to you very soon and probably see you again very soon. Thank you very much, Vladimir.
Next time in Moscow.
Oh, that's an interesting one. I don't know. I'll get a little heat on that one, but I could see it possibly happening. Thank you very much, Vladimir.
Thank you.
And thank you all. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Nothing has happened. Nothing. This is nothing. What the fuck? I mean, this is what happens when you call summits for no reason at all. This is Trump. This is Trump. It's always been like this with him. I mean, Trump will call summits and meet with people and, you know, prepare press conference and announcements of nothing. And he's going to bet that something happens. You know, it's kind of what happened with Zelensky too. But with Zelensky, the difference is they got to ridicule Zelensky, but there was nothing to announce when Zelensky came to the press conference at the White House, and then they started dunking onto Zelensky, and J.D. Vance came in and started beating on the dead horse, and even a press person started criticizing Zelensky for his clothes. But it is what we get with Trump very often. It's nothing. Trump is a loose cannon. I'm sorry for those who love him, and I love him in many ways, and he's a better president than many others, but Trump is a loose cannon. He is a man from the world of marketing where nothingness is being inflated and foamed into something. So what do we have here again? We are in the same situation that I've been describing, and this is what kills me as an intellectual. Like, my job is to describe situations properly, and 2 months ago, 3 months ago, I was saying, look, we have talks of peace between Putin and Trump, but I see no substance. I see no substance because the situation is that Zelensky is deluded. Zelensky and Europe are fucking deluded. Like, beside the track of reality deluded. They think they can get back Crimea. And it's like, I can respect the hustle. I can respect the idea that, oh, we want Crimea as a negotiation tool. But if you're being real about this, and it's always what you want and always what you will demand, and you're not playing it as a poker face type of thing, but as a bluff, but you're actually wanting Crimea, you cannot regain these places that are Russian-speaking, that you've already lost, that have been secured under Russia, and that, honestly, are just living a better life at this point within Russia than they were under Ukraine. So these places, they don't come back. It has always been declared within Russia internally that those are now administrative regions of Russia, and whatever are the dust left of the Ukrainian army occupying these regions is really just disruption. It's disruption of otherwise a working society. So you're not going to get back this. You're not going to get back Crimea. And you will probably not even get anything as long as you keep it a possibility that Ukraine will ever be in NATO. So here you have this problem where they tried last time, they tried passing it to Putin under the rug of, oh, we will do a promise that we're not in NATO for the next 10 years. That's worth nothing, absolutely nothing to Putin. Because Putin's worry is not about Ukraine in NATO within the next year or within the next 5 years. Putin's worry is a historical worry precisely in the long-term future. So Putin isn't scared of NATO. Putin is alarmed at the idea that his future replacement, long after he's dead, Putin is worried, my future heir to the presidency of Russia, they will be too easy to manipulate, too easy to threaten, too easy to extort if they are within striking distance of a NATO force where Moscow is close to Ukraine and where we can be bombed at any point. So and when Trump says, well, there are a couple of details that aren't totally there, and then one major detail, we know what it is. It is what Zelensky was describing as the lack of security guarantees. To which Trump had said, oh, we can guarantee security. We can send you some security agents. Flashlight style, looking in the bushes. But that is not what Zelensky means. By security guarantees, Zelensky is talking about membership in NATO. And that's a no-no and a deal-breaker on the side of Russia. So it's like, either NATO comes out clearly about what they've been doing, which is they've been conquering, basically, militarily conquering territory to surround Russia, to surround a considered enemy of NATO. Or they're not, but it's the game that they're playing anyway. So it's like Putin called it out and he was right, because it's the one breaking point on which these negotiations mean nothing. It means nothing if Putin said, all right, we're going to give you some nuclear submarines to icebreak Alaska for digging for oil. Oh, that sounds good. That's the kind of thing that Trump likes to include in a deal, but those are side issues. The question is, will you abandon your dreams, your NATO dreams, and will you get Europe to abandon their NATO dreams of surrounding Russia? Simple as. And as long as we don't have this solved, we are still in the exact same situation. The jackacid says Putin had balls to come to American soil. Now Trump looks weak if he does not do the same. Any deal should include the arrest of Zelensky for war crimes. Russian capital used to be Kiev. Jeff, would you arbitrate a peace deal if you were asked? I think I would be the perfect person. I'm kind of a cold guy, and I can. But it's like you won't like my methods of peace. My methods of peace include preemptive nuclear bombardment. My methods of peace, it's like, all right, I'm gonna bomb your five biggest cities every day. And then I'm gonna bomb the five next, the next day. And then I'm gonna bomb the five next, the next day. And you're gonna have millions of deaths on your soul, waiting on your soul, until you sign a peace deal. I'm giving you a 2 days notice. This starts in 2 days from now. If you want to sign the peace deal right now, we do it. If you want to wait for the first batch of five cities getting nuclearly annihilated, let's go. Let's do this. And it's going to be five cities a day. Now, I think we would get peace pretty quick with this. Something tells me that, you know, it would be so easy, so easy. Inflict massive damage on Ukraine is the only way you're going to get a change of mind, because Zelensky is this edgy kid trying to play the passive-aggressive game of maybe we'll be in NATO, maybe we won't be, maybe we can give you 10 years without us in NATO. It's like, you know what you're doing. It's disgusting. It's disgusting, and you don't win anything by engaging in diplomacy with this. When Trump calls Zelensky and calls Europe, he's going to get the exact same answer that he's always had, which is, oh no, but we kind of want Ukraine in NATO. And we kind of like the idea of preserving Ukrainian territorial integrity. Well, you don't have it. You don't have it. So this is the time for... I hope that this was a symbolic first step in a new Trump. A new Trump that says, all right, we're trying the soft way right here. The soft way is I'm being friends with Putin in Alaska. It's a historical moment because Putin is on U.S. soil, and it's a meeting with the U.S. only. It's not some international committee of whatever. And under the weight of this symbol, I expect Europe and Zelensky to fall in line. But if the symbolism and if the soft approach doesn't work, I'm literally siding with Putin in the war. And I'm going to be delivering arms not to Ukraine, but to Putin. And we're going to make it costly for Ukraine. We're even going to deliver intelligence and perhaps bombard Ukraine until it accepts peace. And it's going to be, we chop more of the territory every day. We take more chops until you say yes. The will of Zelensky and the will of NATO is all that is in the... it's the only obstacle. The only obstacle to peace right now. And we could have an economic boom stemming from a general impression that the whole world is headed to peace. But we're not getting it because of these little creep, these little swamp creatures of NATO, of the military complex, the Jews, and Zelensky. John Drake says, Trump and Putin want a trade deal on top of stopping the war. But that's not hard. That's not hard at all. That is not hard at all. The one thing that is hard is to get Zelensky and NATO to give concessions that they've already given. You lost this territory. You're not going to gain it back. Ukraine has been absolutely incapable of making advances onto conquered territory. Only when Russia voluntarily withdrew from Kharkiv did they get it back, but that's very easy to do. But they were speaking of all sorts of points on the front line where they were telling us, we're going to get it back. It's the meat grinder. We're grinding Russian meat. We're grinding orcs. Remember this whole mimetic campaign where the Russians were presented as orcs? And we're grinding the orcs. And we're going to soon make a piercing into the front line. Never happened. So there is no ability militarily or tactically to advance. We are really just in a situation where a man, Zelensky, is capable of keeping a cycle of suffering for his people forever, which of course are not his people because he's Jewish, and he's capable of capturing them in a forever cycle of suffering just because of a political ambition at the geopolitical level, which is the absolute surrounding of Russia to the door, to their doorstep, by a NATO-included Ukraine. Doubting Thomas says, JF, what can come out of this? Could there be an agreement of no U.S. interference/support for Ukraine, no more intel, weapons, etc.? This seems tangible. Well, my point is, this should be done by Trump without any sort of negotiation with Putin. Trump should separate from Ukraine. Trump should even try for Congress not to be sending constantly money to Ukraine. And even if they do send money, you should block it. You should say, all right, I have this order from Congress, but I can't write the check because I'm the executive power and I can't. So already Trump could make a lot to disconnect Ukraine from any sort of fighting capabilities. Now, of course, you would have the counter reaction, which is that the UK and the Europeans in general would side with Ukraine and would try to help them more. But that would be a much weaker support for Ukraine. This doesn't require a deal with Putin. This Trump doesn't have to trade it because it's an element to put pressure on Zelensky. It's an element to make the war harder for Zelensky. Because I've said it from the start, and it is still my view. There's nothing that changed 1 week ago, and nothing that changed today. The weakness of Ukraine is the only bottleneck determinant of the end of the war. The reason we don't have peace is that Ukraine, while it's not confident at all that it can take back territory, it's confident that it can be this little punk, swamp punk of Russia, and that it can damage Russia economically enough and preserve territory enough out of the hands of Russia that they are not super scared of being completely destroyed. The reason we don't have peace right now is that Zelensky feels that Kyiv is relatively safe. And so the weakening of the Ukrainian war machine is what's needed to head toward peace. Simple as. As long as Russia doesn't have the resources or the care to dominate all of Ukraine, as long as they have removed their eyesight from Kyiv, and as long as Kyiv has a feeling that they can be confident in their maintenance of the current territorial lines, you don't have the ingredients for peace. And it's not because of Putin, it's because of Zelensky. John Drake says, Trump should have cut off targeting and monies to Ukraine on day one. It was a layup. Absolutely. And we're stuck in the big problem of Trump, this continuity with the deep state, this continuity with the regimes and the former regimes. Trump was supposed to be a radical divorce from the usual, and yet we get these congressional appropriations that are just continuing the money flows. It's like, we don't even know. We don't even know what this bill says. It just extends everything for a year. Let's make it a big, beautiful bill. Oh, yeah, it's continuing everything we've done. Well, wait a minute. Everything we've done has sucked. Everything that the U.S. government has done for the last 40 years sucks. You're going to continue for one more year and you're going to call it the big, beautiful bill? Holy shit. By the way, for those who are members of the Patreon and the Subscribestar, we are making a change this month. There will be no more of a private hangout. I find that the monthly private hangout, it was nice to chill with people, but the scheduled nature of it was becoming extremely difficult, and with the small base of support that I have, with the two or three people who are willing to show up for the monthly hangout, it's not worth it anymore. So we are moving to the Nick Fuentes model. Instead of a private monthly hangout, we will have an ongoing private chat. This will be my war room. This will be the place where you can expect me to respond at all times. If you want to join the Patreon or the Subscribestar at the $20 level, insert your Discord identity into the Patreon website or the Subscribestar website, or send me a DM and tell me that you have subscribed, and I will unlock the general patrons secret Discord server channel. It will be for the supporters of the show so that you can have a line to me at all times instead of just hanging out with me for an hour for the month. You'll be able to chat with me on the everyday as I prepare the show. So that's our new model. I saw that Nick Fuentes was doing this. I found it was a great idea. I will be much more available and on a much more regular basis to a chat than I could be to a private show. And that doesn't mean that we won't be talking. We, from that private chat, we can make a voice channel also, and we'll be able to, if you have something to tell me and you are a Patreon or Subscribestar supporter, feel free to call me up through this private Discord room, and we can go into a room with audio. Here's another proof that this, that Zelensky doesn't want peace. He's sending these armies of drones. That was just a few hours before the meeting in Alaska would begin between Putin and Trump. Look at this. Drones in the direction of Kharkiv and drones in the direction of Crimea, headed toward Moscow, headed toward the other provinces here. This is clear that we're talking about a man who doesn't want peace. If he does this, a few hours, it's a big message, a few hours before a symbolic message is sent by Trump, this teenage type of attitude guy who wants everything for himself, Zelensky, sends drones to mess up the, to make Putin more nervous, to just create a little bit of economic damage. It was not particularly clever strikes that have been carried by these drones. I mean, one wonders how much is this drone worth. I mean, those may be like $100,000, $1 million maybe. So you send a suicide drone to a residential apartment. It's like, what the fuck? Very unintelligent, surface damage. I don't think it's gonna have structural impact. But it's like, it's just the inducement of economic cost on the other side. Not very intelligent tactically. So to do this a few hours before before discussions for peace shows that Zelensky is not invested in peace, and the reason he's not is most likely that he feels too confident that Putin doesn't have the energy, doesn't have the capacity for expansion. Not that the entire Russian Empire wouldn't in principle. They could roll over all of Ukraine if they wanted, but he's probably suspecting that Putin doesn't have the will to use all of his resources and pour them in a costly war that would cost a lot of lives and to gain Kyiv and to gain the whole of Ukraine. So because Zelensky is not scared, he has become comfortable in his position. He's become comfortable at, oh yeah, all we have to do is send a flow of volunteer, of course, kidnapped men from the streets of Ukraine to the front line, and we can maintain a certain form of pushback onto the Russian entries. That is very sad. Everything about this war is sad, and we will need so much more decisiveness on the side of Trump, but we're not getting it. Trump is now saying, oh, I'm going to call Europe and call Zelensky, and it's their decision. You should put more of your foot, you should put more of your strength behind this, Trump, and not say it's their decision. Say, you're going to do it or else. That is something I would have liked to see in an effort for peace, because Trump is getting played in a way. He's getting played by a system that has decided to switch up because Trump supports peace. They've suddenly rotated to Europe, and they're now counting on Europe to fund the war and fund Zelensky. And that's Trump getting played. Trump should be much more concurrent and take his legitimate seating as the most powerful man on earth and say, no, no, no. The kids are going to have to stop fighting here, And I don't care how it happens, but if anyone shows up in my as an obstacle in my path toward peace, I will do serious damage to them. John Drake says, I think Zelensky is scared. The lines are breaking down faster than ever. Yeah, there is some documentation of a piercing of the front line by Russia. I saw that a couple of hours. There's also claims from the Ukrainian side that they are pushing back on this progress of the Russian army. I mean, who knows? At one point, everything will collapse. Who knows when that is? Like, at what point does all of your frontline Ukrainian soldiers are Down syndrome? At what point is it that you literally picked up the retards of your society because you have no one else left? That point could be tomorrow, or it could be in 5 years from now. But it has to happen. There has to be a point of collapse for the front line. Because it's an active war. It's an active war where there's not much movement of the line. But there is constant pressure and constant checking on both sides. John Drake says, I think... okay, this one I read. Lana Loyalist says, Trump refuses to stand up to NATO outside of boorish rhetoric on boomer social. Russia will never make a deal until territorial integrity is respected and NATO backs off. Exactly. It's as simple as this. So, is the other side ready to give these things up in their demands? That is the question. And if they're not, then they are effectively giving credence to Russia's view of the world, which is, hey, NATO is encircling us. Why? Why is are they going so aggressive in a way that we couldn't go? We couldn't, team up with Mexico and team up with South American nations to get closer to hit the U.S. So if we can't do it, why can they do it? We are learning that Dieudonné is, Dieudonné is this black comedian, stand-up comedian in France. One of my big influences. I love Dieudonné. He's been hilarious to me. He's been critical of Jewish power. That's what led to his cancellation in France in the years, maybe 2005, building up to 2015. So he was a very early victim of Jewish power because he started making jokes about Israel and Jewish power and how they like to promote this hatred of the Muslim. And he is a hilarious guy. But his show has been canceled across France by the government. Literally in France they don't give a shit. They don't need to pass through corporate private entities. They literally outlaw the show of Dieudonné across all of France. Dieudonné was commenting that there are some islands of France like Guadeloupe, Guyane, and La Réunion. These colonial islands of France, those are the only place where his show is still... It's still legal, but in all of the main places of mainland France, this show is illegal by law. And it's fascinating because it's declared by law. And you have the slogan of France, Liberté, Égalité, Fraternité. Liberty, Equality, and Fraternity. And yet it's stating that you can't host Dieudonné for a show in France anymore. I mean, this has been going for more than a decade now. Dieudonné has been truly persecuted in France. What a comedic talent. So sad. Because holy shit, was he a hilarious guy. And at some point he challenged the powers and it's too bad that it didn't work, but he wanted to start an insurance company. And it was the Anana Insurance, the pineapple insurance. And it was an insurance company that was that was carrying one of his jokes about pineapples. Because one of his jokes is that he had to include in his show a pineapple song about the Holocaust. And in French it sounded absolutely great when he was singing show ananas, show ananas. And it was to mock the obligatory speech that the French government was putting on two shows where they had to be celebrating and sanctifying the Holocaust. And eventually he had the idea of converting this pineapple song for children into a pineapple insurance company. So he wanted everyone who has their car and they're forced to have insurance, they would have a pineapple insurance card that shows their support for Dieudonné. Unfortunately, when you get into that kind of business, the cartels are impenetrable. The companies go after you, and they completely destroyed him financially. But it would have been great. It's gonna have to be in that form, the revolution against unfair power, against cartels. We're gonna have to start taking chunks of the market at some point. And we're gonna have to, if you want the power to be shaking in their pants, you have to redirect flows of money toward legitimate causes. Rudy Lucid says, celebrating the Holocaust? Well, you know, celebrating in the sense of celebrating an anniversary, in the sense of sanctifying and kneeling to the ID. Let's check in on the rule of law, says James Kirkpatrick. Abolish the Senate and the Electoral College. Pack the court. Why the left can't win without a new constitution. Yeah, so the left, they know that. When you think about what is this series of things, the Senate, the Electoral College, the courts, all of these things have been designed to stop them, to stop the march of what they think of as democracy, which is really giving power to idiotic peoples. At some point, the left will have to win this war. I mean, you've seen how they've progressed in the last few decades. They don't give up. The only moments of relief that we get is when the Republican Party starts serving Jewish interests so hard that the Jews are like, oh, well, you know, maybe we should go with George W. Bush. Maybe we should go with Trump on the second presidency. It's really, we are stuck in two very evil forces pulling onto American politics. One force is the left. They don't want due process. They don't want the Senate because they don't want anything else than black people voting, basically, and eventually all minorities being so numerous that you can't outvote them. That's one direction. And then the other direction is the neocons, the takeover of the Republican Party by warmongering interest. We don't have much of a voice in between. John Drake says, the Republic is the answer to democracy. The founders hated straight democracies. Yes, but we have so much dipped into democracy, we've opened the door. And democracy is a self-reinforcing system. If you give a little power to the people, eventually they elect themselves into even more power. That's how you get gerrymandering rights. Well, now if you control the gerrymandering, you control the future. Buto says, I thought it was Anana Insurance because when you make a claim, they tell you, de l'argent, on n'a pas à te donner. Anana n'a pas à te donner. Oh, well, bro, Buto, thank you for your French play of words, but on this English show, most likely most people will not understand. Anna Pahadane. Most likely your play of word qualifies only for our French audience, which must be a minority. But thank you for making me laugh. Fuck that, says Hunter Biden, rejects Melania Trump's $1 billion lawsuit threat over Epstein smears. Fuck that, that's not going to happen. So Biden was being asked, will you withdraw, will you retract your statement? His statement was, Melania was introduced to Trump by Jeff Epstein. Now, that's an interesting claim, because you can think of Melania. I mean, she's this Eastern European type. She has an Eastern European accent. I don't know exactly of which country. She's been a kind of model. So she's kind of a trafficked woman of sorts. You know, she has been through the immigration process to become... And, you know, I don't know how many years it took, but eventually down the line to become the male wife of Trump, right? And it was a very big stereotype, the idea of getting your male bride from Eastern Europe. So she is Slovakia. Okay. So all of this to say... It's interesting how Trump ended up having a male bride, an immigrant male bride, and it's important to understand in the context of everything politically. I think most of the time we tend to forget. J.D. Vance is very obvious. J.D. Vance is married to an Indian, and J.D. Vance's kids look Indian, as Nick Fuentes was pointing out. Your kids could walk in any Indian town, and they would look absolutely at their place. That is quite something to consider, that the two powerful people at the head of the U.S. Have been race mixing to a degree. J.D. Vance much more. And on a more distant race. So all of this to say, Melania Trump, and on top of it, there is a picture of Melania Trump hanging out with Donald Trump, and Jeff Epstein is there. So there are kind of bases to believe that there were relationship between the birthing young couple of Trump and Melania and Jeff Epstein. So now, Melania is suing for $1 billion. The First Lady's attorney have also cracked down on others peddling similar falsehoods, forcing the Daily Beast last month to retract an article pushing the same narrative after facing legal heat. Biden doubled down on his accusation in a prior sit-down with Callaghan, alleging, according to his biographer, Jeff Epstein introduced Melania, citing anti-Trump author Michael Wolff and other dubious sources. He went on to claim, it is beyond a doubt that he, Trump, and Epstein were very good friends, and for a very long period of time. They spent enormous amount of time together. They spent an enormous of time together around young women. What I said was what I have heard and seen, reported and written, primarily from Michael Wolff, but also dating back all the way to 2019, when the New York Times, I think, reported that sources said that Jeffrey Epstein claimed to be the person to introduce Donald Trump to Melania at that time. I think it's a realistic position to take. I personally do not, I'm agnostic. I do not believe particularly that Melania has been introduced by Jeff Epstein. But there are bases to believe it. And so if you're a Democrat like Hunter Biden, you're going to read these sources. And of course, you're going to like what you read. And you're going to accept them. And I believe that with what Hunter Biden is presenting here, that there are enough sources for him to claim that he was not lying intentionally. And because of the standard of actual malice, I believe that he could get away with it. He could get away with it. He could go through the defamation case and be judged not guilty, not in charge of the damages. Not because I believe strongly that Jeff Epstein introduced Melania, but because the reasoning there is possible. And there are authors that he can quote, and he can just say, I believe these authors. If he genuinely believes these authors, then you don't meet the standard of actual malice, and then you lose. Alt-Tech supporter says, Nick Fuentes gave you a shout-out on his show last night. Yeah, it's good to hear good words from Nick Fuentes. You know, I'm happy in the end because I produce a very autistic media. I know that what I produce, like when we did 2 days ago, the Candace Owens full rereading of everything that she's done on Twitter lately, that is kind of autistic. Not a lot of people like this level of detail, but I'm happy that you have a Nick Fuentes here who basically says, I cannot watch anything else than JF, basically. So for the level of autism of Nick Fuentes, my show is just right. Just the right balance of autism. And I like this because in the end, I do not consider myself... I do not consider that I am a producer for the masses. I consider that you should come here a little bit like you come to a specialized university class of some sort. And I wouldn't produce mass media just for the fun of the mass media. Of course, at times in my career, I've expanded and broadened my audience up to millions with Warski Live. But it was always with the idea of let's expose a larger audience, but still to the intellectual content. Let's get them to taste a little bit of that. And I'm happy that, for someone like Nick Fuentes and for the old school people of the internet, really, people who consumed YouTube in 2016, the YouTube of today is just unsatisfying. There is not much things that I can watch either. Just like Nick said, there's not much shows that I can watch. Because to me, as an internet native, it's something big. Like, because the internet was populated by all these fucking idiots and retards that eventually joined it. And it's so sad what happened. Because it used to be that the internet has attracted an elite. And it was an elite of very special delivery capabilities. The early internet streamers, and I count myself as one of them, they were able to be entertaining for hours. Just hours of entertainment. It never really got to suck. And the modern people that are now on the internet are incapable of delivering this. Which is why they have cutouts, they have jingles, they have ads, they have switch-ups. They are incapable of doing a 1-hour-long, 3-hour-long, 6-hour-long monologue. And that is a skill that was present, definitely present in the early streamers, the early big popular streamers of the first generation of YouTubers. And it kind of disappeared with what you would expect from the theory, which is that people get more stupid as you become broader and broader. When the internet was attracting only 0.1% of the true human population, of course it was 0.1% of tech-savvy, therefore higher IQ people, just by accident. But when it starts attracting basically 50, 100% of the people on planet Earth, then the internet becomes the true face of humanity. But the internet of the 2000s didn't know that this humanity was out there being so retarded. So you had kind of a special selection effect where you had people with massive delivery talent that had super autistic technical interest in specific things. And it led to a very special kind of content that today gets shoveled in with the rest of the crap, unfortunately. And so it can't quite survive. And there's a degree of autism that you can't quite have because the rules have become so tight that they basically detect that autism. They will detect it if you're questioning the narrative too much on this or that, and poof. In the end, you end up having a reduced cognitive diversity. You end up having exactly what was described in this age-old quote, that eventually people will become so dumb that they will arrest free thinkers for thinking offensive things about them. So we're there. We are absolutely there. And I love that Fuentes, through his acknowledgement that he can't watch much content other than JF, because I'm just like him. A Fuentes show, I will put this as I clean dishes. I will put this as I fall asleep. I'll be super happy. And there's not a point at which I get tired.
As right-wing atheists, we reject government and God on account of them being tyrannical organisms that demand blind obedience. Can we conclude that leftist atheists and right-wing Christians are LARPing as adherents to the principle of anti-tyranny?
It's an interesting angle. Let me see how you describe the LARP again.
As right-wing atheists, we reject government and God on account of them being tyrannical organisms that demand blind obedience. Can we conclude that leftist atheists and right-wing Christians are LARPing as adherents to the principle of anti-tyranny?
Well, first I would challenge your premise. I do not reject God because it's a tyrannical organism. I reject government because it's a tyrannical organism, and it's one that takes decisions with money that it doesn't deserve. So your representation for the government is correct, but for God is not correct. I reject God because I have not been given evidence to believe in the existence of God. And when I mean the God that I reject is not even the moral component of God. It is his physical manifestation. I do not believe that I have enough evidence to conclude or to need to require a God physically existing. So my rejection of God is very different from my rejection of government. I would say that as a first comment on your premise is misleading. That being said, suppose that we still lead into your second question without accepting your premise. Can we conclude that leftist atheists and right-wing Christians are LARPing as adherents to the principle of anti-tyranny? So basically, there's two categories here. Let's address them separately. Leftist atheists, are they LARPing as adherents to the principle of anti-tyranny? Leftist atheists are definitely showing a rejection of some degree of authority. I don't think it's a LARP. I think it is a preference that is encoded genetically in them. And I believe that the rejection of tyranny for the leftist is broad, but it is tuned to specific aspects, which is, for a leftist, COVID is not tyranny. Because, don't you believe, in this house, we believe in science. In this house, love is love. In this house, the leftist doesn't believe that COVID was tyranny because it came from the government, it came from a collective process, and it came from a scientific, technocratic, expert-based concept. So because it's experts, it's not tyranny. The leftists really have this kind of bug in the brain. On the other hand, the leftists will they will misfire in evaluating tyranny when it comes from wealth, private meritocracy systems, capitalism, and systems of control that are not collective in nature. So if you got your wealth through your parents or inheritance, or if you got your wealth through success on the market, then suddenly your tyranny is illegitimate. And suddenly even the things that you do that are not tyrannical, the leftists will see them as tyrannical. For example, employment. The rich person can employ someone because they have extra money. The leftists, though the employment relationship is entirely consensual, the leftists will see it in a system of extortion where, they will tell you that you're exploiting the worker, that the worker had no choice, that they had to work for surviving. They will tell you that you are living off the profits generated by the work of the worker as a capitalist. So the leftist atheist has a specially tuned genetic preference against some forms of authority which are private in nature, but doesn't see tyranny, the very same tyranny, or even graver. The leftist is blind to it if it comes from what he perceives as legitimate technocratic voices, which is collective communism, collective decision-making, government decision-making, expert-based views. So the leftist, no, I would say, is not LARPing as an anti-tyrant. He's just freaking disbalanced in what is tyranny and in which context he sees it. Now you ask, therefore, in your second question, there is a second category. Are right-wing Christians LARPing as adherents to the principle of anti-tyranny? And by doing so, you are suggesting that the right-wing Christians, they submit to God, but they do not submit to government. So are they LARPing as adherents to the principle of anti-tyranny? Because, okay, you are suggesting that they are submitting to God, but they are also submitting to government in their modern form where they are too statist. I would say that I'm not sure that the modern right-wing Christians claim to be that much on the right in that sense. I'm not sure that the modern right-wing Christians consider that liberty is a big checkbox on their thing. In fact, many of them are anti-libertarian and explicitly so. So I would say the modern right-wing Christians, they know that they are authoritarian. The generation of Nick Fuentes and all of his followers, they will not tell you that they are for the greatest liberty possible. In fact, to them, it sounds very leftist. And in a way, libertarianism has been taken over by the left successfully in their diluted form of their vision of liberty and tyranny. So I would say, no, I reject your two claims. I believe that right-wing Christians, they know that they're not for liberty, so they're not LARPing as anti-tyranny. Now, you have a lot of MAGA boomer that are against the tyranny of COVID, for example. And so, in a way, there is still a heart beating for liberty in the right-wing Christians. But I don't think they're LARPing it. I think they are just genuinely reactive to forms of tyranny that come from the government, in a way that you would expect in someone who has some sort of nucleus of liberty-loving, freedom-loving libertarianism. Although they will probably not tell you that they are full libertarians in any way. And then I reject your claim that leftist atheists are LARPing, because I claim they simply have a different definition of what tyranny is. Israeli unit.
Appreciate the detailed response.
Well, I appreciate your generous donations to the show. Thank you very much, friend of Gandalf. And for those who want the automatic tip reading, use the streamlabs.com link, jfgtonight/tip. It is my favorite way to receive support for the show. Dutch Robert says, I am not in favor of libertarianism, and I am relatively secular. Libertarianism is far too libertine, in my opinion. Well, in my view, in the end, it is the only legitimate role for the common government should be to just make sure that there are no other acts of violence, that the government should, the only exception that I allow for the police is to maintain the state of liberty, not to allow people to drive on roads, not to have universities, not to have hospitals, not to have diplomacy or people speaking in my name. The only thing that the government should do, and it should do it right, and it should be less than 1% of the of a country's economy, it should simply make sure that people aren't committing crimes. Let liberty handle the rest. Israeli unit tasked with smearing Gaza journalists as Hamas fighters report. According to a report, The Guardian reports that they have a legitimization cell. So they bomb a journalist in Gaza. They bomb the whole team of journalists, and apparently intentionally so. And then they have their guys on Wikipedia, the internet, and in journalism, trying to then make the case publicly, oh, that was a Hamas terrorist, and they will use any sort of dirty data they can find, or even false claims if needed. They smear the journalist after they're killed for the purpose of just legitimizing the actions of Israel. Peter Schweizer says, declassified bombshell, the FBI's own internal timeline memo, just declassified by FBI Director Kash Patel, proves that multiple FBI field offices were investigating the Clintons for the pay-to-play and bribery revelations contained in my book Clinton Cash, and then the Obama DOJ ordered the carrier agents to shut it down. So, not surprising. You have a bunch of honest policemen at the front line, at the bottom, and they're like, hey, let's open up an investigation on this whole Clinton pay-for-play, like, oh, I hire you for a speech, I give you $1 million for that speech, but really, I'm just buying political access to you and to your future political decisions. Definitely that has happened, and it is illegal, it is bribery, and but the FBI was not let to investigate. Rudy Lessid says, of course, James Comey shut down the investigation while he was head of the FBI. And John Drake says, nothing we didn't know here. Absolutely, this is known, this is very old stories, but we have a further disclosure on this stuff. DC Attorney General sues over Trump's hostile takeover. So the Washington City DC Attorney General Brian Schwab, a Democrat, has filed in court on the principle, he says, that Trump cannot take over the police force. He is arguing that the emergency mechanism described in the law doesn't allow Trump for such a broad and wide takeover, because Trump took the whole of the Washington police and said, you're now part of my administration, you're now my police, and you're going to follow orders from the Department of Drug Enforcement and Narcotics and whatever. So basically, he took control over the whole of the Washington, D.C. police. Of course, you have the Democrat administration here in the DC Attorney General, who says you can't do that. We want our crime back. They're demanding, we want our crime back. We want dirty syringes on the streets in Washington, D.C. We'll see where that goes. As a last news item tonight, this girl is now memeing on the internet. People, she's kind of at the edge of red flag, not red flag. Apparently, this is a Mormon dating show.
Okay, I'm Riley. I'm 24. I'm from Houston, Texas. And honestly, I'm down for any good adventure. I just got scuba dive certified, and I'm planning to go to Australia this summer, so I'm super excited.
Scuba dive certified, bro. You are taking too much risks. You are putting yourself at risk. You're going to end up like the Australian guy, pinched by a poisonous ray at the bottom of the sea. You're going to die. Lana Loyalist says, okay, Jeff, the obvious question is, would you inseminate? Well, I would inseminate, but I would be trying to get her off the adventure route. And if there were other women on the show that are not adventurous, I would go for them. Silver Spider says, Jeff convinced me we can't have libertarianism with the people that exist today. Oh yeah, that's one of my big punch. The big JF red pills, that is one of them. Absolutely. Impossible with the current people that exist.
About that. And then I just picked up skiing like 2 years ago. And I honestly love any themed party. Like, those are like my favorite things to go to, my favorite things to plan. And I'm looking for...
Now, the guys don't see the girl. They just hear her voice.
For someone that wants to be my adventure buddy, and it's someone that I can trust in and is going to be...
Oh, no, an adventure buddy. This girl is trouble.
Be there for me.
Aww.
They're nervous.
Come on, guys.
They're so
anyone.
Scared.
Come on.
Hey, Riley, we're gonna have you sit down, but thank you for introducing yourself.
Fully rejected. Wow. Yeah. Well, the problem with adventurous is first you're putting yourself at risk. So I make this massive value investment in my time for a uterus that will produce babies, but it could die hit by a stingray. It could fall from an alpine excursion of skiing. It could get captured and kidnapped as part of an international trafficking ring while traveling in weird places. I can't make all of this investment that I would do for a family woman onto a woman who doesn't respect the risks that she takes and respect herself enough not to expose to all these risks for all this thrill adventure, really, which shows a lot about the girl's dopamine system. If she's excited at the idea of doing scuba diving and skiing. Nicholas Petris says, definitely has not a super appealing speaking style, and the adventure and travel affinity is indeed a red flag. Yeah, on top of it, the way she delivers it, it's like, you know that there's some narcissistic red flag under there that's, you know, that she finds herself so special. I'm so special that I need an adventure side crew. She's basically recruiting an adventurer paired male for herself. That doesn't look like family building. So, of course, the other woman would be a better choice on average. Rock and Diesel says, most men work hard and want to relax. Shamrock Shake says, the immigrants in our nations are very tribal. I don't think libertarianism would win with mass immigration. Oh, no, I mean, and it's beyond the tribalism. I mean,
they just have no concept that you should exist independent of government, that the government should have this kind of bubble of distance and remoteness from your private life. They don't have this concept because they come from people that live literally in piles of garbage. Like, if you live in a pile of garbage, and what distinguishes your bedroom from the other bedroom in the slum is like this semi-wall of layer of dirty carpet, metal, like, layer, you're not going to have a concept of privacy, a concept of decency. You're not going to have a concept of the government shouldn't intervene in my life, because the very next person that lived to you next in the slum, you were equally competing with them to gather your shit food or buy your shit food from the shit food preparer of the street. There's no way you're going to develop libertarianism in this context. Silver spot, you kind of need cold, and you kind of need single houses and single residents and the nuclear family to start understanding, okay, happiness is here. That bubble of thing works well. I need to protect it from the outside. I need to keep the garbage out. I need a garbage man to collect the garbage so that I can protect this bubble of entropy. And you don't develop this in India. Corpus Chris says, Nick Frentes said last night that your show is one of the very few you can watch. I know I commented on this earlier in the show. You can rewind 30 minutes if you want my commentary on this. That is it for tonight, boys. And is it Friday? All right, if it's Friday, I'm going for a weekend. No show Saturday, no show Sunday. I'll be back on Monday. Much love, everyone. I'll be enjoying the weekend. I have some good food. I went to find a new meat place where they sold me some good meat. I have short ribs. I have my venison burgers were pretty good. And meat has been very cheap in Canada these last few days. I've seen pork at crazy low prices where I had to buy a shoulder and a lounge of pork because the prices were just too interesting. So I'll see how this results in cooking this weekend. Much love, and I'll see you all on Monday.